Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. Talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter.
And thank you, everybody. Welcome. This is Andrew Fetter. Thank you for listening in. And this is, of course, When Pigs Fly, because simply BS doesn't around here. Or at least I try not to. I want to give you a special announcement for those in the Los Angeles area. I also want to thank I had a special class with my associate Sharon and Joseph, and we had it yesterday. We're going to have those in the Los Angeles area. We are going to continually have those classes every Thursday. We will be going through esoterics, meditation, Kabbalisms, channeling, angels, numerology, karma, past lives, manifesting, healing, and all the spiritual concepts. We had an excellent class yesterday. Again, I want to thank for all those who have came out. We will have a class again on the 14th at 7:30 p.m. in the Calabasas area, Calabasas in Los Angeles. Those in the LA area, Calabasas is on the west side of Los Angeles. And for more detailed information, please do contact at 818-912-2535, or you can email directly to Sharon. And then again, NITKA, that's SHARONNITKA, at sbcglobal.net. Now, this is sort of like a part two from my last show, from last week's show that I did on June 1st. Last week's show, I gave really more of a political, detailed, historical, accurate picture of the Middle East from the real reality of it, and the real history, not the made up stuff, and that stuff that's been revision or recreate history that never was there. They're trying to, out of political agendas, recreate stuff that's actually totally incorrect. Please do check out that last show. I really go into detail of a lot of historical facts and the facts and the certain dynamics of the Middle East. It's certainly imperative to, before making any opinion or things, to understand the foundation of things. Such would be, how can you possibly make a real clear opinion about the Middle East? Now, it's whether it's the Israeli Arab conflict or Palestinians or Egyptians or Shiite versus Sunni or any of that stuff. One needs to know, understand the true history. Now, today I'm going to get into the spiritual context, but, you know, like I said, when people think in the spiritual context of the Middle East, the first thing that comes up, they think of conflict and the consistency of conflict. Of course, there's been conflict in Europe for thousands of years, and there's always been conflicts in the areas. But naturally, when you talk to anybody on the average person, you say Middle East, first thing pops up is conflict. And like I said, there's been, or it seems to be, for 1,000 years, a never-ending conflicts of some sort or another in some region within the Middle East, like a never-ending thing. Another aspect, when you say Middle East, the first consortium of person will pop up in their head is terrorism, probably because of 9/11, magnifying terrorism. Actually, it is the Middle East that's had portrayed more terrorism than from anywhere around the world, and that's sort of actually a fact. So, it's not somebody making up that up. It's just in reality that's the way it is. It's not been the only one. Depending everybody's era, there's been terrorism. You can say back in the days in the 1800s toward Native Americans, there's been terrorism in Europe. So it's not something new. But anyway, when you first think of Middle East, you'll think of maybe terrorism. And there's a reason why you're thinking that way, too. You're actually tapping into the reality of certain situations, that there's a conflict, it's a problem, which I'm going to get into. which is the epitome, the emphasizing problem within the, our, as humanity. The other thing is, when you think of the Middle East, people think of the horrible treatment of women and the degradation of women or the rights of women. That's the first thing that comes out almost immediately. And you can got to think about why and how that is. The extremism of religions, that's another one, the first connotation when people think of the Middle East. The last, of course, the things that we stick in our cars, gasoline, or notably where it comes from, oil, is the other one. That first thing you mentioned to people when they think of the Middle East, they think of oil. But what most don't recognize is that actually what's wrong with humanity can easily be seen within the Middle East. But before I digress and get into these issues or emphasize the issues of that, I know, and like I reiterate last week's show, I spoke in specifics of history and relationship between, like, for example, the Israelis and the Arabs and the Jews and the historical conflict. And again, please, I highly suggest, please listen to that show that aired on June 1st. It's in the archives now. But now I wish to explain just even the, which I didn't get in last show because it was such a long show. I want to get in, before I get into the spiritual context, the understanding of between what the Shiite and Sunni conflict is. Because that's actually a historical understanding needs to realize. I mean, if Bush had any brain, he would realize, Iraq, we get in there, it's going to open up another can of worms. And the same thing with Carter. You know, there's with getting involved with Iran and all that. There's a lot of issues that we had in the 1950s with the British and the U.S. trying to tear down that democratic country of, at that time, the democratic form of government inside Iran and placing Shah definitely affected things. Not taking realization of what the true dynamics is. So first, there's actually a fundamental dogma difference between the two. There is also a political difference between the two. This is sort of very much characterized, you know, in its very detail of things. The dogma, or their own differences, arose when actually when Muhammad died. And when he died, it was to disclose who would be the rightful leader of, you know, their movement. And this is where things differed. It started the spirit, their dogma difference. See, the Sunnis had believed that Abu Bakr, the father of Muhammad's wife, the wife of Aisha, though it's the old, his first wife, was Muhammad's rightful successor. And the method of choosing or electing leaders under the Shura, it was endorsed by the Quran, is consists of what they call the Ummah, which is the Muslim community. However, so they believed that it was out of like a vote. You weren't like ordained to be like they voted for who would be the actual leader. On the contrary, the Shiite believe that the Muhammad's divinely ordained cousin, son, and son-in-law named Ali, who is a father of Hassan ibn Ali and Hussein ibn Ali, in accordance with the command of God in the Quran, to be the next caliph, making Ali and his direct descendants Muhammad's successors. Ali was married to Fatima, which is Muhammad's daughter. And Muhammad's wife, Aisha, endorsed her father, Abu Bakr, as a successor. So you can see where there started a conflict. I know it's sort of confusing at this. Now, there was a major battle after they actually fought in 656 over this. As Aisha opposed her stepson-in-law Ali outside the city of Basra, because she wanted a justice in the perpetrators of the assassination of the previous caliph, because this is what started happening. People are starting killing off their leaders of Othman. And then forces, and they were defeated, and it just continued on and on with segments of infighting of who's going to be basically the caliph. So it started basically after the death of Muhammad, and the end of being the caliphs, and caliph means the leader, their actual leader. After Muhammad died, it was Abu Bakr, and guess what, how long he lived? He lasted for 2 years. He died in 634. Then there's Umar ibn al-Khattab, and he died another 2 years. Then there is Uthman ibn Affan, and he lasted from 644 to 656. So that's like another 12 years. And then there finally, Ali finally made it in 656, 661, of course, and then he was killed. So it was within a span of maybe, 30 years after Muhammad died that all four leaders were killed. So it was pretty bloody, and it gives you a ramification of what situation was, how politically, more than spiritually involved Islam was at that time, and how it is even put out in today. And you can see the ramifications why there's such a political spread. And I'll get into another dynamic of the Shiite theology, the differences, but there's also a major political reason why the Shiite are mainly inside in the area of Iran and partially in Iraq. In the Shiite theology, they discount the legitimacy of the first three caliphs that I before mentioned. And they believe that Ali was the second most divinely inspired man. They really believe he was the most inspired man after Muhammad. And that he and his descendants by Muhammad's daughter, Fatima, the daughter of the first Khadija, Ben Qadda and the Imams are the sole legitimate leaders. And this is where the word Iman comes, is Imani of the Shiite, which encompasses four, a lot more prophetic function other than the caliph of the Sunnis. That's how they look at them. Unlike the Shiites believe more in a heavy spiritual qualities that are granted not only to Muhammad, but also to Ali and other imams, and they're called the Twelvers, which are believed that the imams are immaculate from sin and from human error, and can understand and interpret the inner meanings of the teachings of Islam. In this way, the imams are sort of the trustees and the light bearers for Muhammad. So in other words, in the Shiite, they believe that, as opposed to Sunni, Sunnis believe more or less, their mullahs would make interpretations, but then there's like they will have can have arguments of discussion of that, as opposed to Shia, imams are the trustees, like their word is word. They are the only ones who can truly interpret it. We know it, you don't know. So that's sort of the way it would be. Like I would say, if you want to compare in Catholicism and Christianity, I would say the Shiite are the way is more closer to like Catholicism in a way. I'm not saying it's them, but just that I'm saying it's, you know, they are the true, their two understandings, the priest, the pope, the cardinals of the Bible, and you just, their word is their word. And as opposed to the Sunni, and that's sort of, I know in broad stroke, that's just in the broad stroke. There's also a big difference in the versions of Mahdi, which is the Islam's version of the Messiah. While Shiite and Sunnis differ in the nature of the Mahdi, both believe, especially like the Sufi, believe that the Mahdi will appear at the end of times. That's the end of time, just like the Messiah. In the Shiite Islam, the Mahdi symbol has always developed into a powerful central religious idea. The Twelvers are of the Shiite believe that the Mahdi will be literally Muhammad al-Mahdi, the 12th Imam, returning from the cultation where he has been hidden by God since 874. In contrast, the Sunnis believe the Mahdi will be named Muhammad, and he is going to be a direct descendant of Muhammad and will revive the faith, but will not necessarily be connected with the world end. So there's sort of a major difference, and that's just one of the differences. And but there is a political difference. And like I said, the origin between the split, the Sunnis and Shia'ite, initially occurred after the death of Muhammad in 632, as I mentioned. Muslims in present day, for example, in Saudi Arabia, have often questioned the succession. This comes in the issue of Hezbollah, which are part of the arm to change that understanding. There's also a little political fight over control of Mecca, because Mecca is controlled by the Sunni. And so there's also that spiritual political connection too, who is rightfully to be the protector of that area, their holy site. So anyway, so again, it goes back to who's the direct descendant. And the most powerful prophet, Muhammad's followers, wanted the community of Muslims to determine who would succeed him. And this is how the view of the Shiite. A smaller group would continue on, and, like I said, they favored Shiite. And I can go on and on in that type of history with the dilemma and what went on. The Sunnis basically prevailed in there, like I said, who would be the caliph. And like I said, there was violence and major war between those two factions for a long time. In fact, when Ali died, Hussein, who was the leader of the Shiite, he instrumentally was rejecting the next caliph. And so there was a major war, and unfortunately he was in a very large battle. He was executed, he actually was decapitated. His head was carried as a tribute to the Sunnis within Damascus, in fact, and his body was part of it during the Karbala. Later he was buried, but Hussein's death, the symbolism of the way he died, is actually a spiritual power for the Shiite. So that's symbolic differences. You got to realize, so right after Muhammad died, they went through a period of over 100 years of not just little battles, major, major, major conflicts. So it was a point where it started and never ended. It never ended. And that's in the spiritual context. So that's his root. That's basically the call has always been there. It's been there for, like I said, thousands of years. But a major event happened. During the 1500s, Persia was actually ceded by a Sunni Islamic learning, but it all changed with the arrival of the Hazari conquerors. They were basically up into the northwest of Iran, present Iran, or probably northern west Iran, let me be more specific. They established the Safavid dynasty in Persia, which is now the modern-day Iran. And then they made Shia'i as the official religion. So all those who were living in Iran had to convert to be Shia'i, not Sunni no more. And so as a dynasty actually came out of its way from literally out of eastern Turkey, like I said, it's not really the dynasty wasn't Iranian. They came from that area. Out of that Turkish dynasty became the rulers of Iran, and that's how Shia'i became basically, what it is, why it's in Iran, and why it is. So it was under the Safavid dynasty that made it a political project to convert Iran into the Shia'i. Eventually, Shia'i gradually became the glue that held basically Iran or Persia together, and it actually distinguished itself from Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman basically was more Sunni, and had what they also called, they also differed the Shiite from the Mughal Muslims to the east in India, who were basically Sunni themselves. So that's why you can see in today's time why there's the Shia'i where they are, and where the Sunni are and would establish a political conflict. And it's to understand this, you'll understand that in this spiritual historical conflict, that is in the relation of how years and years has been carried on from one generation to another, and the perpetuation of hate and divide is another issue, which I'm going to get into. So this is what is the Middle East. It's basically getting to now into the spiritual context of what it is. Basically, you can look at the Middle East as my way, which is the right way. Either it's a Shi'i, it's my way, or it's Sunni, the my way. It's Islam spread out of might and out of political norm, similar to how Christianity spread to some extent how when the ancient Israelites took over Israel. It's sort of the same thing, and to some extent, but not exactly, because they just basically eradicated everything to a large extent. But that's the move. If you look how Shi'i became the central post of Iran, it is very identical to the way Constantine created Christianity being the national Roman religion. And when Constantine did that, he was in his attempt to unionize Rome under a theology, because there are so many different religions, so many aspects, and it wasn't being held together under, your Romans believed in one kind of thing, and then you'd have Greeks, different kind of gods. Everybody had different gods, so they were trying to unify out of control. It was a way of controlling people, which most of all organized religions are. So this is basically what transpired. And in spiritual context, what has come to be is basically a manipulation of my God is better than your God nonsense. It's basically been women are characterized as less than men. It's basically been nature and sexuality is seen as unclean and therefore unholy, blah, blah, blah. It's basically been the Ahmeds versus, which is like the Ahmeds, Hatfields versus the Ali McCoys. It's always been Shi'i versus Sunni, Sunni versus Shi'i, Muslim versus Jew, Muslim versus Christian, Muslim versus Druze, and so on and so on and so on. Never ending. Even Shi'i and Sunni versus Sufi Islam, which is ironic because that was one of the most profound leaders of Sufi Islam was, of course, Rumi. And Rumi actually was very close friends to many even Jewish Jews at the time in living in Israel, particularly Rambam and even Kabbalists. And they had a close relation. They also used to elaborate between the mysticism of Judaism and the mysticism within Sufi Islam. But Rumi said one thing you have to hand it to him, and it was actually right, and this is the problem in the Middle East. He had once said, I quote, "I go into the Muslim mosque and the Jewish synagogue and the Christian church, and I see one altar." In other words, he didn't see a difference. He felt God was God. Like I'm looking at a chair from a different angle, there's still God. The way I look at it, we're saying the same thing from different sources, different angles. And this is the problem when it comes into spirituality. People often differentiate. The problem, the essence of the humanity becomes a problem, is not realizing what is reality versus truth. Reality is the reality of perspective. Truth is truth. An essence of humanity is the real what truth is. And heart being the truth. What is conflict? A lack of harmony. That is what conflict is lack of harmony. The untruth. One can say that there is a duality, but in reality of the world, there is actually a symbiosis with all things. Hence, the issue of the Middle East is actually literally the epitome of what is wrong with humanity. It is the disharmony. It is at its most. You can see within the Middle East every single thing what is wrong with humanity, and yet it even shows us how to fix it, because what they have, it's not being fixed in the Middle East. There's always been an us versus them theme in the Middle East, and every theme, every mentality within the Middle East. There has been a thought pattern of living in an illusion of finite and an illusion of separation. That is the Middle East. They live in an illusion of finite. They live in an illusion that everything is separated. They live in an illusion that what they see is what they see, and what they hear is what they hear, and what they taste is what they hate. They live off that. They're very senses, the very things that they actually sense, as opposed to the reality of what things really are. You do not see energy. You do not see love. You do not see the vibrating force of light. You do not see even the vibrating effects of sound. You do not see light traveling at light speeds. But those are exist, don't they? You do not see electrons. You do not see molecules. Yet they're there. You see, still in the Middle East, it's what you see is what they believe. If you look at the belief systems of the Middle East, they believe not only that they are separate from each other, but they also believe that they're somehow separate from nature. They assume that even God is somehow separate from themselves, which is the underlying wrong illusion of their perception. They see things separate. God is out there and not in me. It is God telling me. It is Allah telling me. Get it? They're always thinking it's some God, something separate from themselves. Some might say, but isn't everything in one's own perspective, including, and I would say yes. So then their reality, then there is a truth. Your reality is dependent on your frequency and view as a leaf from the tree. But the truth is the truth. The truth is the reality that we're all connected. That is not a perspective. That is the absolute truth. There's no denying it. Can't get away from it. We're all connected to each other. Again, some might say, but isn't that your reality, your truth? So let's look at the physical universe only. Are we not made of what? Matter, which is essentially energy. And since we're essentially nothing more than energy, how much of are we are exactly of energy? If you're looking at us, we're first of all 99.9% space within the function of, let's say, the molecular structure of ourselves. But essentially, we're energy, right? Matter equals energy. We consume food to what? To pop energy. The proteins in our body is fundamentally brought about by energy. They're held together by energy. When we die, what happens to our physical form? We are converted from one energy to another form. Whether you bury us and our bodies absorbed in the molecules with earth, or some people who may burn the bodies, it goes into another form. The physical nature of bodies, of conversion of energy, one source or another. We are energy. Physically, we're energy, and we're all the same. We're all connected to each other. We see with our eyes, but with our eyes, we assume we are separate. Again, do you see energy with your eyes? Do you see feelings with your eyes? You know your feelings exist, but you can't see them. Do you see then our divine connection with yours? Can you see the love, the connection of your loved one? See, the folly of humanity is assuming separation is the reality. This is what is in spiritually the albatross. In the Middle East, the counter. The imams, the mullahs, the priests, the ministers, the reverends, the pastors, the monks, and the rabbis, they all have led you away from your true self. the truth of God and Allah. If you look at the proximities and the realities of hate, if you look at the division that is emphasized, if you look at the treatment of women, if you hear the words of hate being broadcast from the towers, from the mosques, if you look at the lack of tolerance to fellow human beings, if you look how freedom is turned upside down by theocracy, just look. Look at Egypt. Look at Syria. Look at Iran. Look in Gaza. Look at Arabia. And so on. I can continue on and on. Look at the epitome for what it is, what is wrong with humanity. And you see the wrong direction, heading into the dark path of divide and hatred. The irony of all these many souls, in fact, in the Middle East, is they don't realize that they may be in this lifetime a Muslim, but perhaps in a past life, they're a Jew, Christian, or Hindi, or other in the past. The enemy of one was once the enemy as hers and the soon enemy of before. Meaning, reincarnation, karma. What was once the Hatfield is now the Mokoi, what was the Mokoi is now the Hatfield. What was once the Palestinian is now the Israeli. What was Israeli is now the Palestinian. What was once the Shiite was now before the Sunni. What was once the Falang or the Maronite Christian is now the Muslim. Now what was the Shiite or Sunni Muslim is now the Christian Copt. What was once a Christian, a Jew, or a Muslim? How many experiences do you think you're actually limited in? How many things do you think you're actually limited to that very sequence of things? Think about it. How much separation are we? How much are we really in reality assuming our separation? Look within the United States. Look in Europe. Look what is even broadcast with its elements of separation and illusion of separation. What is the result? Hatred. You know, there's a song that was sang by a famous man who was killed in the streets of New York. He was once a Beatle, of course, and he once sang a song called Imagine. And I'm just going to read off just the words alone. I'm not going to sing them, because if you sing it, you guys would want to turn off the show immediately. But it says this: imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. What is that? There's no heaven. There's no hell. Meaning, quit the nonsense of division all the time. Quit looking at us that we're separated, that one person is going to heaven and one person is going to hell if you don't believe my way or the highway. Instead, imagine us all living for who we are as people, as people, together. We are like leaves on the tree. We have different perspectives, but we live off of each other. That's the tree life. That's the reality. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die, and no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. Meaning, if we have borders, people come and go where they want. If there's no somebody to tell us how to believe in a God, and that's my way or the highway, or you have to go in this special place and that's how it is, and those people who don't believe our way are less than us, or we should try to convert those people or subdue those people or make our rule of law. If that stuff was gone, would there be war? Would there be violence? Wouldn't it not be, as he put it, imagine all the people living in peace, salam, shalom? Imagine. I may, as he says, I'm a dreamer. but I'm not the only one. Hope someday you'll join us and the world will be as one. It's not just a dream. It can become a reality. It's not our thoughts. It's our progressions. If people stood up and not engulfed the putrid of hatred and division that's paramount, in fact, right now in Egypt that I just saw recently, that we're going to go and kill them. I felt like I was listening to Nasser in 1967. I was in shock. If you look how speaking these political leaders, it is going to bring the demise of the people in the Middle East. I'm just telling you. What happened to the German people in the 40s, it's certainly for a reaction, will happen to them. Then they're going to cry, poor victim again. I'm sorry, you're volunteering it. I'm praying and hoping with a dream that you come to the senses and see the reality that we're not separated. That they're the ones telling you the lies. They're the ones pointing the finger to the other guy to hate and telling you that they're evil or they're bad. They're the ones pointing, that's when they say, oh, we're taking over the city and going to drive out those people from that land. That is out of evil and separation. That is out of the foundation of division. That's not joining. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if we can do that. No more need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood of men. Imagine all the people sharing all around the world. We have the bill today, which is not what I'm going to get into, to actually share, to be things. We do have the ability to have free energy, which would be the broadcast, and we move ourselves from this barbaric monetary systems that's profound and move into a non-monetary systems, I'd say almost like Star Trek, if you want to call it that. If we implement free energy, we would not have greed or hunger. People would be more focused on developing themselves. Now, most of you say, oh, I'm just a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will live as one. Of course, those were his words, John Lennon's. So the spiritual truth is quite simple. Division and the separation, whether by souls to souls, is a lie. The division and separation, whether by souls or soul to the universe and God, Allah, is a lie. The illusion of separation between being the lie, which is the cancer of humanity, is magnified throughout the Middle East. It is a lie that is killing and wounding and perpetuating the continuation of suffering. The lie and separation is bringing out upon all in the Middle East the suffering, the lack of food, the poverty, the violence, the never-ending struggle. They are creating their own desert, their own sands, their own barrenness. They create their own. There are no such things as victims. They're only volunteers. If you teach your children to hate, you have just promoted your children to die violently. If you teach your children to hate again, I repeat, you are the ones responsible solely for their death and demise. You only. Don't blame anybody else but yourself. This is what's been going on for how many years? 100 years? 60 years? You blame and blame and blame, and you perpetuate hatred. And then you cry when you're destroyed. You cry when earthquakes are around you. You cry when violence is all about. You cry that you are now being submitted to. You are crying that you are weak. You are crying, and you cry and cry, and you run to a book. You run to the Iman for salvation. You run to the Mullah for salvation. And then when they get onto their pedestal, what they say? Hate. Hate, hate, kill, 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 division, division, division. And that, again, re-emphasized your own lie. The illusion of separation brings one thing, the lie, which is the cancer of humanity. And again, it is magnified in the Middle East. The lie is being lived in throughout the Middle East, and it's for all humanity to witness and learn what is truth. We can change. It is our opportunity to come to the true nature of us with God, Allah, and the universe. We are, in fact, leaves on this tree of life. So, just like leaves with different views, in fact, in truth, we are not only connected to each other like leaves on the trees of life, the branches, our branches as well, connect us to the same common trunk. And we are nourished via the same common roots. And we're nourished through the roots via rooted with the same common ground. The spiritual truth. The spiritual truth. We and spiritual truth are all connected. We are all one. And hence we are one with God and Allah. And I want to go into read something that I found sort of like I wrote myself, I guess, in that poetic kind of context, and I call it praise. Let me get a drink here. Oh, the praise, reverence upon the valleys, from the heart of the past, the oil of olives, within the vines of the ravine, thinking in midstream. Prayers of the ancient metals, songs of mysteries dwelling within the heart, the ego encircling my mind from above, fires of the sea glowing of deep ambers, cascading the divine from soothing waters. Oh, the praise, and yet knowing the fly swarming like assumption of lies, scribes, deceptions within the deep blue skies, blurring the soul with eyes of flowering fear, and the fragrance of swamps being the separation, walking upon marble cloth, clothed in linen, all knowing the order of this misguided manipulation. Duality being the assumption of many, rocks grinding while ice is cracking, the light of understanding shining the symbiosis, the reality, the chariot singing in harmony like clouds in the deep blue sky, oceans and rivers connecting hearts of mankind, like souls of mankind, yet the eyes of the desires smothering the truth of the everlasting tree, separation being the lie, as the soul's leaf withers from the chains, and the yells and the cries and the illusions as the pendulums of karma swings. Oh, the praise, the name be many, the stars are gazing our soul beyond, the real essence of the universe is none. Be thy name of names, the utterance of many, reaching for the very truth essence, only never understanding the very presence. Oh, the praise, the mutter and worry of delusion, as food being to the fish, yesterday and tomorrow what was will be. Now you are truly not free, yet all in all the sun always rises over the aquarium, but the awareness is simply being the key. The cups, the swords, the fools of thought, choices and will, never the determined. The magic of shuffling cards of illusion. Interpretation being the game of confusion. Oh, the praise, the free will, the choosing of choice of humanity's free will. The paths, the winding roads, the being of choice of numbers. The souls of endeavors, the journeys yet one encumbers. The rushing wind and the scathing of chalk, the screeching of tires and the dripping of water, lurid fears being of the known, and yet as the universe smiles with laughter like a clown, Oh, the praise, listening to the voice of the sea. The ways of simplicity, yet so many. Minds are unlimited and beyond the epiphany. Opening my eyes, I close my mind. Listening with my ears, I close my heart. Touching with my hands, I distance my soul. Seeing beyond my eyes, hearing beyond my heart, touching beyond my hands, fall, fall, fall. I am, I am, I am all, I am all, I am all. Oh, the praise, hear, O thee, for I am you, and you are thee. We are them, them are you, all are all is none. The none never to be a wall, none being the all. Oh, the praise, the praise, the praise. In essence, I had many things I put in that poem. But like many things, when what people place out words, their utterances and their things about dynamics of situations, my greatest emphasis is knowing of understanding the true search situations and searching for truth. At the same token, while we're searching for wisdom and knowledge, we should also, at the same token, come to realizations of the realities or the real truths, meaning that we're all connected. It is once said that if you brought into all understandings and thoughts of humanity, and including the world, it'd be like spokes on a wheel. In the center, the wheel is the very essence of all things. And when you come to that wheel, where it spins, you see that there's nothing there. The nothingness is the connecting force. The nothingness is us. Why do you think we're made of space? We're 99.99% space, nothingness. What is energy, essentially? Can you touch your finger to energy from one end to another? No. The problem is, in humanity, like I went through to yesterday's my class, or my our class yesterday, when I tried to create the understanding of the reality, most people look at things with a finite understanding. They look and that's what they see. They experience, they think their senses and their ears is what they experience, which it is what they experience. But what they think, they assume their experiences of what they affect with people, nature, things around them is the their own reality. And yet that reality they're assuming is like living in a fishbowl. If I took an aquarium and I had a bunch of fish in it, and I put the aquarium on top of a table, the fish think that world is the aquarium itself. They assume that they're separated. Yet, if I put my hand in front of it, it sees my hand flashing before, in front of the glass. If I turn the light on and off in the room where the aquarium is, they made me think that they see that. Because they assume that is part of their world. They feel the world is limited either direction. They look at things and forces limitation. There was one person who once called, I think it was Bashar who said this, that humanity is the masters of limitation. Meaning that we try to limit ourselves. And the reason why we limit ourselves is because we have a vision. We have a perspective of limitation. Because we have a perspective of finite. We assume things are separated. We assume things are finite. When we change our perspective of looking at things in a finite aspect, finite being the untruth, the illusion, when we look at things in an infinite manner, that's actually heading toward the light. That is of lightning. That is the enlightened one. That is Allah. That is God. God is Ein Sof. God is without, is beyond infinite. When you go into areas where it's a he or a she or a him or a her, when you look at God as being something finite, you're in an illusion. You're simply not in reality. You are in not in truth. You are in your little reality, but that little reality is not. It's like you're now in that fishbowl. You are an aquarium, living in an aquarium. You are the Truman. And this is what's happened in the Middle East. They have a bunch of little aquariums. And those little aquariums live in their little worlds. And they see each other in each aquarium, and they want to incorporate that aquarium into their aquarium. And so shoot a missile into that one, or that vice versa. Or maybe that aquarium, somebody has an aquarium that turns out to be a bad aquarium, is full of stuff, and the people moved in there, cleaned it all up, and now it's a really cool aquarium, so they get jealous, and they want that aquarium. You see, that is the Middle East. Everybody's living in an aquarium of illusion of separation. They assume that we are all separated. They assume, in essence, that we have been separated for thousands of years. They assume that God is somehow separated from ourselves. They assume that somehow nature is separate from us. Is it? Is it? When you sit in your mosque, temple, or church, and that earthquake rattles and shakes and opens up and swallows you in, you're now, how far are you separated from Earth? You're consumed by Earth. And that hurricane or rainstorm comes and flushes you out. The travesty that you see, as much suffering that is, it's showing you when the Mother Earth throws you the reality, the truth, that you are nothing more. Does Earth actually separate in a village where it has a city between Muslims, Christians, and Jews, and suddenly there's a hurricane or a volcano or tornado? Do you think it goes, oh, we're only going to get these guys, but not them? No. Because in truth of the matter, you're all the same. We're all the same. We all bleed and die the same. We all have one heart, two eyes, two arms. We're all born the same, 9 months. We're all made molecularly the same. Spiritually, we're the same. We carry our differences, and our differences amplify our perspectives. And the perspectives that we have is our views, and the views that we have, like a leaf. If you ever look at a tree, the leaves are pointing in different directions, and they all think, wow, I have my vision, I have my view. But look where the leaf is. It's connected. And even when the leaf dies, it falls, a new leaf is grown in place of it, right? That's the new person in a new soul within that new body, having that new perspective. If people in the Middle East would see this, of course, the people throughout the world would see this. If you look into what the world in the Middle East is, it's based upon division. And out of the division comes separation. And out of the separation produces hatred. It's amazing. You go to when I lived there during the 80s, and I know it's still like that. You can go from town to town to town, and they separate people. Oh, this is the Shiite side. This is Sunni. This is where Arabs, Muslims live. This is where Jews live. This is where Christians live. Everybody's separated. And then they separate even further. There's no unification. That's the loss. I mean, if you get into the essence of the truth within, like, Islam or Christianity or Judaism, it's to be one. What was to be one? Yesterday somebody asked, like, one God. No, one God wasn't one God. One God separate from you. One God means together, biyahad. It's one with God. That's what it means, one with God, because you come to the realization that we are just one. We're one with each other. When people assume that God does certain things, it's not God doing this, it's just us. We are God. It's already there. It's already causing action for every reaction. When the Pharaoh, when it wasn't God who caused the plagues, it was out of, if you read, it was out of Pharaoh's own mouth, out of his own heart, out of his own mind, he created his own inflictions. His own anger brought his own things upon himself. And this is what I call to the people, whoever listens, those people, for example, I recently heard in Egypt, you're going to bring upon yourself. You think suffering is suffering? Not the way you're going. Karma is karma. And there's going to be major suffering in Egypt. And I'm telling you, you put famine, make that big old F on famine. People are going to be starving in Egypt the way they're heading. The amount of hatred they're spewing right now. Do you think it's much karma, what's happening in Syria, for the years of hatred being spewed out in that country and division? Look how much what happened in Lebanon. And you don't think there's a karma consequence? I feel sorry for the people in Lebanon, but there is no victimization. There's only volunteers. Foreign entity such as Iran comes and imposes its free will using the vehicle of Hezbollah, perpetuating hate and divide with Shi'i Sunni. Why not? They try to form some sort of a unity type of situation, but things have been taken advantage of. And then people have different understandings of even democracy. Democracy ain't a great thing, by the way. You need a republic-style democracy. Democracy is literally mob rule, 51%. As Ben Franklin once said about democracy, he said, democracy is like two wolves and a sheep voting on what's going to be for that day's meal. Get it? That's what you have. That's like what's happening in Egypt. That's what's happened in Tunisia. That's what happened in Iran. That's what happened in all these places. You think there's going to end up being democracy, but democracy comes with tolerance. And what is tolerance? Respect and removal. The removal of our understandings of separation. And you're not going to change it. It's not going to change until people come to the realization that we're one, that we're all the same, that we're one humanity, and head to that proper direction. If you go into a synagogue, or you go into a mosque, or you go to a church, and immediately they tell you that person's going to hell because he doesn't believe in Jesus Christ, or that person's going to whatever because he doesn't believe in Islam, or that Jew is like Moshe Israel, he's not a good Jew, because he doesn't believe our way of believing Judaism. As soon as they do that, they're actually what we call, they say in Hebrew, chet, or bad karma, or they have sinned. That's heading toward the dark. That's not God. Far from it. That's away from God. That's away from Allah. Anytime a people talk of negative to another people, anytime there's no love, no compassion, going the opposite direction, that's not God. Anytime there's a propensity of looking at things differently, that we're separate, that's not reality. That's not the true spiritual truth. So when you look into the Middle East, and you see how people are treated, I'll tell you, somebody, in fact, before I go, there's somebody asked me about women, why women were so important, because I was talking about that. And this is why the middle, and particularly it's going on in the Middle Eastern woman. Think about it. In Muslim culture, in the Muslim culture right now, if you sit there and you bash women on the head consistently, I'm talking in spiritual context, make them think they're lesser than themselves, you know, like lesser or something wrong or negative, diminishing their self-esteem, in other words, diminishing their self-love, and they carry a baby with them. And they have the energy of feeling less than, diminished, What do you, how do you think for 9 months, that baby, the energy of surrounding that baby is, that baby now has less self-esteem, less self-worth. It's like being smack dog upon the smack dog. So what you have done is perpetuating lack of self-worth, lack of self-esteem, not toward godness, not toward the light, opposite. And this, what happens, then it goes into a course of a belief system such as what is in what they use in the mosques of today, perpetuating hate and division, not love, kindness. I would like to see one imam, one mullah stand up and say, I love Jews and I love Christians. They are our brothers. They are our sisters. I love Israel. I want peace. I want to see one that says, I love my fellow man, whether it's Sunni, Shiite, Druze, Copts, Maronite, Falang, I don't care, Hindi, Buddhist, Baha'i. When they say that, that's Allah, that is God. When they say, I want to kill them, I want to destroy them, I want to hurt them, you are city, we're going to conquer. That's opposite. Think about it. That is the epitome of what's wrong. That's the division mentality. That is the hate mentality. We are what we are. We create things by what we think, and people don't realize the karma consequence. So I want to close with a song. It's called Kaddish by Ohr HaZa. Actually, it's a Hebrew song, but it has many instances. And right now, this is Kaddish. And why I'm having this out, this is putting this out because, unfortunately, I see a lot of demise, a lot of things happening in the Middle East. This is toward the people who are being murdered and slaughtered in Syria. This is what's going to happen, the bloodbath and failing in Lebanon. This is unfortunately, unless they come to realities, the Palestinians, Jordanians, Israelis, which they should just do joint control of that area, like I had said. If they come to realities, to accept one true peace. If in fact this also goes out to, I feel sorry for those who will be suffering, but it's out of their own choice still, in places like Egypt. This is Kaddish. And of course, it's Kaddish for all humanity, because out of we're all connected. We all suffer through the mentality of continually looking at things separated. So, with that, God bless you all, and have a glorious, glorious weekend. And I close with the Kaddish by Ohr HaZa.
Kaddish for salvation. Kaddish. For redemption, Kaddish. For forgiveness, Kaddish. For health, Kaddish. For all the world's victims, Kaddish. For all the Holocaust's victims, Kaddish. Oh. Oh,